Hello, welcome to Untangled FM. This is Marcus Matthews of the Money Maverick Show. This week we have an amazing guest and we will be talking about council tax and a whole range of things around council tax. Now, here's some questions for you. Do you pay council tax? Or for those who know, do you have your straw man pay council tax? Do you know if council tax is legal? Do you know if it's lawful? Do you know whether there's any issues regarding the actions that councils take if you or your straw man does not pay council tax? Now, for those of you who've got access to the net, there's an interesting mind map I'll also be referring to during this call, which is on the Money Maverick page on Facebook. But either way, I would like to introduce me to my special guest tonight who has done a lot of research into legal information, lawful information, and council tax, and has not only theoretical knowledge but practical knowledge of issues and interactions with various councils and various courts. In fact, I just for transparency's sake and also to make the conversation a bit more interesting, I do have some shared experiences on some of these issues, which I will also refer to during this call. So I'd like to introduce you to Raymond Sinclair. Welcome, Raymond.
Hello, Marcus. How are you?
Fantastic. Thanks very much for joining us on this call, and good to connect again on this interesting area.
Pleasure.
Now, just as we're going to go into this, one thing that some people often ask me is when I'm discussing with various people about council tax, is it a case that you're just trying to get out of paying? Well, I think you'd agree with me that that's not the case, we'll come into that a little bit later in the show. But again, a bit more about yourself. Tell me a bit about yourself, how you first got into studying the law, the legal, the lawful, and specifically the whole issue about council tax. Give us a sort of plotted history in a short, not too long a session.
Okay. Fundamentally, it was my father who started opening my mind to some of the ideas that we now understand from the freelance, like lawful perception. And it was he who began to make me question the way things work. But I really didn't do anything about it in my early teens because I was too interested in chasing games and doing all the things and riding motorbikes and doing all the things that normal lads do.
How did it go with this? Your father getting interested?
I was about 12 or 13 when he started talking to me about the way the world worked. It wasn't necessarily about council tax, but my father had experience. He worked for the United Nations for a number of years as a translator and had experience of how the political systems, both in the UK and in Russia, where he worked for a long time, and obviously saw what was going on and shared some of that information with me. And I think for him, it was more about setting the seed of an idea, a germination of an idea in my mind, that he probably knew I wasn't going to do anything until later in life. And it was about 7 years ago that suddenly, a spark lit up in me, and I started to look, as I suppose many of us do, as to why things are a certain way. Why do the governments of the world, not just in the UK, why do they get away with certain things? Why do they enforce things upon us? And you start to question the reasonability of those things. And that's when I started to find like-minded people out there. I found suddenly that I wasn't alone in thinking the way that I was thinking. And of course, the internet has been a great propagator of information. I also think it's a very good tool for the other side to misinform us by the same method. So you have to be very careful about the information that you sift out of the internet, because it can be bad as well as good, and you have to verify things for yourself. So that, in a point of history, is how I came to be where I'm at. I think that's very important. I want to say at the top of this interview that although you and I have been in this interview, I wouldn't be doing this interview had it not been for a number of people, and I just want to mention some of their names because they're important, as important to this as I am, although I don't think I'm that important in the whole process. People like Norman Heaps, who you and I both know very well.
Yes, Norman, yeah.
Colin Jeffries, and I've been working very closely with Colin over the last few months. Excuse me. And Colin is a real stalwart and managed to get his case before the High Court last year.
And what's the case with it?
This council tax case.
And
actually nearly got it, bar one thing. So we're stepping back and rectifying the mistakes. And Colin is mentoring me to some degree. And Colin would be a great guy to put on the show and on the show because he has a real in-depth understanding. You know, other people like John Betts, Veronica, of course, who can forget Veronica.
Veronica Chapman.
Author of
Freedom. Exactly.
Exactly. Guy Taylor, I just love watching Guy's videos in court. You know, he changes up and down. Recently, you know, people like Patrick Kelly and John Hurst, you know, I've revisited some of the stuff they've done historically on the council tax. And so it's not just me, and I want to make that clear. My knowledge is going from talking to other people, working with other people, and the information they give me and the support that they give me, I'm eternally grateful for that. Obviously, if I can share anything that I've learned with anyone, and if it's of any use to anyone here this evening, then that's
really what I do. Okay, well, thanks for that, Ray. So what we're going to cover later on the show, this is you're listening to Marcus Matthews and the Money Mavericks show on Untangled FM. What we're going to be covering is some of the sort of very fundamental questions, which is, what is counter tax, or possibly what is tax generally? What exactly is the status of a council? Who exactly are they? We'll be revealing that they are not what most people think they are, i.e. what authority do they have? What sort of status do they have? Then we'll go into what some basic issues about what it is they're actually sending you with a council tax bill. Is it really a bill? And then we'll go into what happens if you or whoever it is they're addressing to you, addressing the bill to, doesn't make this thing called a payment. And some of the interesting stuff that I've also been sharing with Ray in previous conversations is about the very dubious or probably fraudulent actions that the council are taking as regards summons and liability orders. What I would say, though, and I think, Ray, you probably agree with me, is that this isn't about not wanting to pay. It's about paying as if there's a valid claim to be made, but it's also about, as you say, peeling away the layers of what actually is going on. So would you say that's a fair comment just to start with before we go into detail?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've said to a lot of people, what I'm not is I'm not an anarchist. And to be fair, if the council ran the provision of services for things like the bins and references and things like that, as a business, and priced it competitively in the marketplace when I had a comparison to other service providers, and also allowed me to have the freedom of choice as to whether I use the council for that service or whether I use a private corporation for that service, let's say reference collection as a point of view, then, and if the council tax was reasonable, we say £200 or £300 a year. I pay it without even thinking about it, to be honest with you, because I think it's a fair and reasonable amount of money that they will probably provide to us. However, what I don't agree with is being hit with a £2,500 bill every year, or an alleged bill, we'll come on to that, for services where I have no choice as to whether or not I use those services, and I'm given no choice, and then I'm threatened with theft of my property and or imprisonment if I choose not to pay for the services that I'm not using anyway. And fundamentally, I don't think the police, and we'll come on to this later on, I don't think the police should be anything to do with the council because, as we discussed, most councils have now bought the police for their own private protection squads, and we'll come on to some of that later. And the reason they're doing that is partly to move the police into the third sector, the corporate sector, which is something John Harris told us all about 3 or 4 years ago. And yeah, he hasn't watched how he was only, but John's right. You know, this is exactly what they're doing. In fact, I was reading the other day about Lincolnshire Police has now been sold to Group 4 Security. So now Lincolnshire Police officers are walking around with Lincolnshire Police and the Group 4 logo on their shoulder lapels, which leads me to the question, well, what are the next? Does that mean now that if you report a crime, that you're going to get a bill from Group 4 Security for services they've rendered sending out a police officer because you reported a crime? Is that the lunacy that we're heading towards? I don't know. And even the head of one of the senior police officers association, Paul McKeever, in the Times, have said he absolutely abhors this move. Well, I think as a nation we should get behind the man, because clearly some of the police officers are now fed up with the situation where all they are is corporate policy enforcers, and it's got to stop. So,
well, talking about the corporate stuff, that's interesting. So let's just go into something which some people listening may know about this, and obviously the aim of the show is to get this information out there to those who don't know. Let's just talk about the status of the council. Now, most people think that the council is part of government, and most people don't actually know what the status of government is, but it's some sort of thing out there which supposedly can do this, that, and the other, and send bills out and collect tax and so on. Now, tell us a bit more about what you found out, which I've also done my own research on and got evidence of, is that, in fact, the council is not what you think it is, but it is, in fact, a company.
Correct. Absolutely correct.
And this goes for all councils in the UK?
Pretty much, yeah. Let's take my council, for example, Tanbridge District Council. They are quite vehement in the way that they approach council tax. And I'm talking to a lot of people who have been, in my opinion, abused by this council. After some basic research, which anyone can do, go to gport.co.uk, which is a company house type website. Dewport is a private corporation, a private company set up to record company details. Once all the councils and authorities discovered that we, for want of a better phrase, the Freeman Movement, were actually finding records on company's house about their corporate status and on Bond Registry, clearly what they did very quickly was to make moves towards company's house, which is a government-owned operation, to remove all the details from that particular database, and also on Dun & Bradstreet in America, they got them up there fairly quickly. But Dewport, it appears that these councils and bodies don't seem to have any clout with Dewport. Dewport keep reporting the facts. And the facts are, if you go and search your local council, you will find that they probably come up under what's called a UC number. But my understanding of this is that that stands for an unincorporated corporation or company. And I'll stand to be correct in that, but that's my understanding of it. And they have a number, a UC number. So the question is this: if they're not a company, they're not a corporation, then why are they listed as such? And why, in those reports, are they shown as having directors and credit ratings? And in the case of my council, in the case of most other councils, county court judgments against them.
Where, yeah, that's right, because they have a. I've done this myself on a number of councils, including Battersea Council and Wandsworth Council, which are both places where my store man used to have an address. We'll talk about store man a little bit later. And they both came up with the exact same thing. They both have, some of them came up more than once. So Wandsworth came up twice, actually I think even three times, and the address coincided 100% with the address on the supposed bills. And they had directors, and they had a credit history, and so on. So some people listening, some people listening might be surprised that in fact the council is not what you think it is. So I would suggest pass it on to anyone else to go to dewport.co.uk, and here's a tip for anyone who's trying this. Try the different words and slightly less than more in the search option, and you will find that council coming up.
Yeah.
But the next question then is, okay, some people say, well, so what? So what if it is a company? Talk a little bit about, first of all, I would like to ask you what you think about, are they representing themselves as to who they are, and is there therefore an issue of misrepresentation? Mm. Secondly, if they are a company, should there not be something in terms of a contract in place between a company offering services to yourself?
Exactly. So to answer the first question, in fact, I'll answer the last question first. Fundamentally, I believe them to be companies, and the evidence suggests that they are. I mean, if you look at their corporate structure, they have a CEO, they have a chairman, they have a board of councils, they file an audit report, and in most cases, they publicly the different parts of their inverted commas business. Now, if they weren't a business, if they were just a local authority, they would neither have to pay VAT nor claim it, because they would be exempt. So why are they claiming VAT, and why are they paying VAT in some cases? So those are questions we need answering, because clearly, I believe that they're corporations. They're private corporations. dressed up to look like people, to try and deceive us into believing that they're not. And they use this word authority, local authority. Well, authority over what? And who gave them authority? And how did they get that authority?
Well, that's the next thing I want to come to. But just staying on the contract aspect. Now, I've also been doing some studying contract law and other law over the last 3 or 4 years, and also way back when I was doing accountancy, where basic contract law was in place. And if there are two parties, which I personally call the monopoly matrix, but whatever you call it, basically, to have a contract, you need offer and acceptance, and you need one party and the other party.
Yes.
So if the council is a corporation, and we'll come to the straw man a bit later, but for the moment, say you or I are the other party, then there needs to be an offer and acceptance to make a contract.
Yes.
So my question then is, where or what is the offer by the council as a corporation to anybody as a potential council taxpayer? Where or what does that happen?
Well, there is no offer. What there is a demand followed by a threat. And that if they are a corporation, which I believe them to be, there should be a contract in place. So they should come to me and say, look, we would like to be the company that empties your bins, and we would like to charge you £300 a year for that service. And I would consider that and go, well, okay, I think that's a reasonable price for what you're offering. I'll agree to contract with you for a given period of time for that service, and I agree to pay you what's agreed in the contract.
So it's all transparent. You get an offer, in theory, or in practice, hopefully, there might be another company who also offers to collect services, which some parts of the country have done recently, and that some have been doing for a long time.
Exactly, and it's working well in those areas. And the public in those areas are getting a better service at a better price at the end of the day.
Well, the important thing is, sorry to interrupt, the important thing is that it's transparent, you're clear about the status,
absolutely,
and you have a choice. So it's not a case about not wanting to pay. You say, well, look, here's a menu of services, you do this, 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 and this, and here it is. So that to me sounds reasonable.
That's how it should be, because they are corporations in my view. However, what they try and do, clearly, is they try and dress themselves up as some kind of lawful or legal authority to give you and I the impression that they have some form of power across us, which they don't. The whole thing is an absolute illusion. I mean, one of the first talks I went to was John Harris. It's all an
illusion. John Harris,
It completely is. It completely and utterly is. And as we get into this, you know, we unwind and unravel the conversation this evening, you know, I hope people will see just how much of an illusion it all is. And it's all done with trickery and words and how they proceed through the processes of gathering council tax, and as you and I both have, you know, hard experience of, we, as a group of people who've started to question this, have begun to unravel their little lie very, very quickly. And even to the point that I have had on nocouncilattacks.com, that very same council, Tanbridge District Council, when I revealed their council court judgments, they actually came onto the website and told us they paid it. And we said, well, okay, if you paid it, that will show on the county court judgment list. Then we'll go and check that. Cost me £6. Guess what? They haven't paid it. They told me a lie.
And the interesting thing is, if I just may pick up on that, they have just confirmed, indirectly or not, that they are in fact that organisation that's listed on that site. And therefore, they must surely be a company that's listed there.
Exactly.
Yeah. So directly or indirectly, they just confirmed their corporate status.
Exactly. And so you're absolutely right. There should be a contract. And what I think most people in this country are absolutely fed up to the back teeth is that the councils basically issue what they call a demand, and one of the points that we are challenging in court is that it's a bill. And as you know,
they don't use the word bill on the piece of paper they send through.
No, on the one that I have, it just says billing number. Now, I went onto the local council's website the other day, and I recorded 37 instances in the website text where they say council tax bill. So when we go to court, we are going to actually bring the fact into court that they council actually refer to it. I've got the tape recordings of people in the council referring to it as a council tax bill. So clearly, the understanding on their part, on their perspective, is that it's a bill. And yet, in a couple of times that I've been into court for other people, and I've pushed that point with those councils, they've gone, oh no, it's a demand. Well, a demand for what? Based on what? On what authority? What are you demanding? What consideration have we had for that demand? And so what they use is the clever use of words and the trickery of words.
So here's a question, just on behalf of listeners who may not know and may not have listened to John Harris or done some wider research. Somebody might say, well, okay, it's a corporate status. I get what you're saying about the contract thing. That sort of makes sense. It may not be the biggest thing out there, but the question might be, why hide their status? Why are they conspiring or whatever the word is? Why the illusion? Why not just say, listen, we're not actually part of government. We are a private company. Why do all this?
That's a very, very good question. I'm glad you asked it. Let's imagine a scenario, Marcus. Let's imagine that the council has sent you a demand for 1,500 quid for a council tax bill, and you looked in and go, well, I'm not having consideration. They've not offered me anything. I'm not paying it. So let's say that went on, and they send you a reminder, and they send you a lasting reminder, and then about 6 weeks later, they send you a letter that says, Dear Marcus, we notice you haven't paid your council tax. We'd be awfully grateful if you pop down to the local council offices and have a chat with us so we can see if we can sort this out. Would you go?
I don't think so.
That's why they dress it up the way they do, because they have to give the illusion of threat and power to put fear into people. You know, I've been in council tax courts and I've seen poor little old ladies of 80 years old whose husbands are probably dead and gone, who served in, you know, either the Second World, First World Wars, and fought for this country. And I've seen these, I use the word correctly, these swines con them and cajole them into making payment arrangements and granting liability orders against them. You know, with no consideration really to their circumstances,
which we'll come to later, a lot of evidence are void.
Yeah. So that's the reason why they dress this whole thing up.
But if somebody said, okay, well, listen, surely the local government is just a smaller version of the bigger government. The bigger government, which for those who don't know, is also a corporation, but let's keep that for another interview. It's just a smaller version of that, and they're providing these services. Is that such a big deal? The big government provides supposedly the defence, the NHS, and the great other things. Which are not always clear. If somebody says, well, look, this is just a small version, okay, they're a company, how do you address that?
Well, in my view, I don't think things like the ambulance, the police, and the fire service, and the education service should be drawn out of the council tax. I think that should come from central government, from our taxes that we pay, and from the money that we input into central government. I think it should be managed by a local assembly or a local controlling council, but I don't think they should have control of the financing of it. Because, to be honest with you, it's easier to manage at a central location than it is, I know some of you don't disagree with that, but that's just my personal opinion. And the municipal services in the locality, such as refuse collection, road street cleaning, de-gritting, all those kind of municipal things that they do, then, you know, perhaps the council should be allowed to charge for that, because because they can actually source third-party contractors to do that for them locally.
So that's an interesting point, because one of the things I came to, and for all the listeners listening, I've had some interesting interactions with Wandsworth and Battersea Council, including turning up at one of these supposed hearings, which we'll come to a little bit later in the call. But the point is, and this is something, by the way, because the Money Maverick is part of a station which is very much into truth, but also staying in honour and having a positive approach to life and everything else. So it's not a case of if you feel you owe it but you don't want to pay. It's a case of asking the questions, finding the truth, and saying, well, look, one of the things that people in what sometimes is referred to as the free man movement, I'm not really keen on this word movement, but who start waking up, is that if you get the benefit and you take the benefit, then it's energetically appropriate to make some sort of value exchange, which is usually referred to as payment. So that's fine. So if the council is arranging for things, although there's some really big issues about how they're doing it, it may be appropriate. But as you correctly say, while you might it's interesting, some people have actually offered to pay councils just the bits that they've actually been supplied with, which sort of makes sense. But if there's a fundamental flaw at the very beginning, which it sounds like there is, we've got the issue of the corporate status of the council. We've got the fact that they're not clarifying it. What I wanted to then move on to is this whole idea of authority. Now, there's some interesting discussions about, first of all, there seems to be a lack of authority on a purely contract law basis.
Yeah.
Putting aside for the matter that they might actually be doing something for you which you might be willing to pay, so I'm not disagreeing with that, and some people would probably not disagree with that,
yeah.
And some people say, well, if we didn't pay for it, then they wouldn't this, and of course, we could have another long conversation about all the rather weird and wonderful things that councils get up to, spending money and putting in Iceland and paying huge pensions and lots of salaries to their staff, but staying on the basics, apart from those issues, what under what authority do they or do they claim to even be sending and levying or demanding council tax in the first place?
Well, let's be clear about this. They don't have authority. That's the bottom line. This is where I'm going to defer to somebody else. If your listeners haven't read a book called So They Say You've Broken the Law by Sarah Lydes, it's a tiny little book. It's £7 on Amazon.
Yeah, that's a fantastic book. I got it very soon after it came out.
Yeah, it's not an extremely well-written book. But boy, is it powerful. And, you know, Sarah's language, and she's basically set down the clear and unambiguous point that they have no authority. What they have is force.
Or the threat of force.
Or the threat of force, or both. Which is why it's called council tax enforcement. When you ring them up. It's not called council tax, good afternoon, council tax authority. It's good afternoon, council tax enforcement. Because all these people who have a claim to authority, that don't have any. Because in order for them to have authority, you have to consent to them having that authority. And this is where we start going back into Magna Carta and, you know, Article 61 of the Charter, which, you know, the Queen is currently under a petition from the Baron on, which means that she's not lawfully allowed to collect tax anyway. Go and Google it, the Baron's decided in 2001 to invoke that ancient article and petition the Queen under that article, and they gained tacit acceptance because she didn't respond within the time frame listed in the Magna Carta.
Just for those listeners who are not so familiar, just correct me if I'm wrong, the basis of all common law or the basic law in this country was done in the times of Magna Carta, I think it was 1216.
Well,
or
common law, I mean, before, obviously, then common sense is common law.
And that was the basis, and there's a bit of a dispute about whether it's some bits or all of it has been repealed or not.
This is what the authorities do. They always refer to the 1297 Charter, and a lot of that has been try to replace it with statute. I mean, the basic law in this country is that anything in Parliament system can never be changed, a bill annulled or turned around.
So the basic thing for today, which most people don't know about and get taught in school, is that this common law is still in place.
Absolutely.
And all the statute law, apart from the issue about it only applying to the straw man, which is an old subject in itself, means that the council claim, they don't have a valid basis.
Well, let's look at this
according to that approach. They don't have a valid basis for issuing a demand, a bill, or anything else.
Let's clarify the status of the power of the common law. At the point that the barons went to the Queen, the law lords, of which they were all members, was the highest court of land. The House of Lords, effectively, the law lords, is the highest court of land. So what you had is 60 barons and a quorum of 25 petitioning the Queen on behalf of these 60 barons. The highest lawful and legal authority in the land, saying to the Queen, listen, Your Majesty, we're not happy. We the people are not happy, and we're not happy, because this is what's going on. You're selling us out to Europe. This is what it was all about. It's all about the Nice Treaty.
So this is what started in 2001.
Exactly.
It was prompted by diluting sovereignty foreign power or whatever you want to call it.
The Traitorous Acts of Heaton is governed in 1772, you know, which is, again, another topic of the conversation. And basically, the 1215 Charter is pretty much still in force. And Article 61 there says, look, if we have a grievance with the King or the Queen, we take that grievance to the King or the Queen, and they have 40 days to respond. And if they don't respond, we effectively, under that, we recover our own sovereignty to ourselves. Now, that's a hard concept for people to understand because
we're so conditioned by the media and the
birth. I'm going to explain how it works. Yeah, I'm going to explain how it works. When you're born, there's a period of 6 or 7 days where you are absolutely sovereign to yourself and onto yourself because you haven't been registered or handed over as a bit of lading by a birth certificate to a government that wants to trade you into slavery. You're a sovereign. You're a sovereign soul on this planet. Second only to God. And the Queen is the same. She is a sovereign soul, second only to God. Now, when she was crowned in 1953, there was a ceremony that took place in Westminster Abbey, and it was called an investiture. And the reason it's called an investiture is because she signed a contract, and she signed a written contract, and there's a copy of it, you can go and see it, that says that we will invest our sovereignty into her as the head of our sovereign state. And she will take care of that sovereignty on our behalf and look after our interests. That's the contract she signed with the people. And she set her seal in the hand for that contract in Westminster Abbey in 1953. It's a written contract, sealed by her seal, between us and her. In allowing Heath to do what he did and giving assent to certain parliamentary acts, she's broken that contract with us. And under the terms of the Magna Carta, what we have the right to do is go to them and say, look, we're not happy, you broke the contract. If you're not going to keep to the terms of the contract, we're going to pull back our sovereignty from you and de-invest our sovereignty back to ourselves and become sovereigns in our own right again.
So in a nutshell, for those who haven't studied any of the old law, which I haven't really studied until recently, whatever happened, whatever weird and wonderful things with the investiture, which you can people can discuss about whether that was right in the first place, under the Magna Carta law, that investiture has effectively been removed by these barons in 2001 or subsequently.
Yeah, well, what they've done,
which means that strictly speaking, although this doesn't seem to feature anywhere in the news or anywhere else, the foundation for the legal system that a lot of people claim authority of is no longer there.
Well, because basically, what the petition to the Queen from the barons has done has removed any lawful right that the Queen has to demand taxes upon us.
So it's just a much more fundamental level, actually,
absolutely,
that you can't demand taxes at all.
No.
So even if, as the government seems to be pretending, that the Magna Carta, that the Queen is an investor with this, and they still have the right to levy tax, then under what basis would that then give the councils a basis to levy tax?
None whatsoever. Absolutely.
Because
they have no authority. And again, you go back to Sarah Lynas's book.
There's no foundation authority because you haven't given it to them as a human.
Can they prove that they have a higher claim upon you than you? Well, of course they can't. All they have is force, and all they ever do is done by force, never by authority. Although they claim the authority, but who granted it? If you don't grant it to them, they can't have it. It's as simple as that. And as soon as this nation wakes up en masse and realises, actually, we hold the power base. Because if we all just stood up, and as John Harris once said, you know, we turn 180 degrees around and we walk away and we say, we ain't playing the game anymore. Guess what they're in? They're in the brown stuff in a very big way, because without force or without fighting, we simply take their power away from them.
Because we
have the power, and we have the right to exercise our right not to give it to them at any time.
So have isn't an anarchist statement, because most people don't even know that the word anarchist just means the opposite of monarchist, because
exactly,
the absence of a monarch.
Yeah.
And
many people who know me, and I will say this, I was a bit misguided in my early youth. I used to go around saying, oh, I hate the Queen, and I hate the royal family. And it's questionable about whether or not the Queen has done good things or bad things. It's questionable about whether Philip has done good things or bad things. But I'm going to tell you this, and I've said this to many people. There is coming a point in this country where Her Majesty will have to make a decision as to who she's for and whose sovereignty she's going to protect. And that decision may fall to Charles if he's king. It may fall to William if he becomes king. But it's going to fall to one of them, because it's going to get to such a position in this country where the people of this country will have had enough. And they will exercise the rights and ancient rights that we're now pulling out of the annals of history and going, actually, we have these rights and powers, but we've had them from the start. We just lost sight of them.
I totally agree.
If she, just to finish that, there's only two decisions she can make. She can either decide to side for want of a better word, with the Parliament, or she can decide to side with her people. Let me tell you this. If she decides to side with the Parliament, the royal family's finished in this country forever, because the people of this nation will not tolerate it. If she decides to start siding with the people, there's no reason why her family can't go on for another 1,000 years.
Okay, I'll stop you there because I do want to get back to council tax.
Sure.
You're listening to Marcus Matthews on the Money Maverick show on Untangled FM, and I'm talking to Rafe and Claire of NoCouncilTax.com. Okay, so far we've talked about the basis of tax on a fundamental level, issues with the basic law coming to now. We've talked about the statements of the council, and we've basically confirmed, and anyone else can check this up, that they are
the non-status of the
or the non-status of the council. Yeah. That's a good point. We've confirmed that councils are in fact unincorporated companies with directors and in some cases court judgments against them, which they may or may not pay.
Yeah.
We've talked about the fact that they don't actually have any authority, either by the Magna Carta or subsequent, and therefore the statute, the supposed, we've got the Local Government Finance Act 1992, which gets quoted sometimes,
yeah,
which therefore doesn't have a basis.
Yeah.
And we've also talked about the fact that whether they're, well, we haven't talked about yet that statutes apply to the straw man.
Well, let's talk about the Local Government Finance Act.
Let's talk about local government.
Because, again, I'm going to refer to General Iris on this. And something very beautiful that she discovered that kind of hit me like a bolt out of the blue. If you actually read the Local Government Finance Act and the statutory instrument which sits under it, which they enforce as well, it says in that act and that statutory instrument a lot of times that the council have a right to levy a charge. But one of the questions we're going to ask them pretty soon in the court of law is, where does it say in your statutory instrument or your act of parliament that we have to pay it? We want to see it point. We want to see what they say, because it actually doesn't say it in there.
But that's assuming that the statute is valid in the first place.
Well, yeah,
we're playing the game at that level for the moment.
Exactly. We'll play devil's advocate here. We'll say
now, let's assume that the statute is valid, which we just described as not valid, but let's assume it is.
Yeah.
It doesn't actually say in there that you are able to...
I've read it and I can't see it. I stand to be corrected, of course, as I do in everything that I say, because I'm no expert. However, I've read the darn thing more than once. I've read the statutory instrument more than once, and nowhere can I see, in any interpretable language in English, does it say that I, me, am liable to pay this tax.
That's interesting, because towards the end of this interview, we are going to talk about some practical issues. Some people may be listening thinking, oh, that's all very interesting theoretically and historically, but what am I doing here with my or my straw man's council tax demand?
Mm.
And we will come to a few practical actions, both in terms of what we can write in terms of a response to a council tax demand. That's assuming that you might want to ask some questions. We're not saying that you don't pay it or that you shouldn't pay it. We're just giving you information for you to make up your own mind.
Well, actually, I need to make clear at this point that the decision to not pay council tax is a dangerous decision, and it should not be taken lightly. I mean, I've now not paid for 5.5 years.
Well, can I just ask you whether that's the correct wording? Because the words I always use is it you or is it your straw man paying, i.e. the address? For those who haven't come across the straw man concept, because the bill is addressed to the straw man, and are you conditionally accepting?
No, I agree with what you're saying, but what I'm trying to impress upon the listeners is this, that if you are not mentally and physically and spiritually prepared for the journey, and believe me, it's an arduous journey, dealing with non-payment of council, if you're not mentally, physically and spiritually prepared for that, and I hate to use the word fight, because that's what it is, they will bring that fight to the door. The council will bring it to you. That's their attitude. Because they believe they have some God-given right to threaten you and abuse you. So they will bring that to your door, and you will get visited by bailiffs, and you will get threats, and you will have to deal with all this rubbish. If you're not mentally, physically, and emotionally prepared for that, my advice to you is don't do it. Because there are people out here, such as myself and Norman and John Betts and others, who are doing it. Now, that's not to say that we couldn't use some more people doing it. Of course, the more people that get on board with us and with this campaign in general to get to the bottom of this crucial matter, which is tied in so many ways to so many other issues, you know, about the core sovereignty of our country and other issues, the more of us that do it, the faster we're going to get the result, because obviously there's strength in numbers.
And to paraphrase what I think we've said before, and one thing I'm always very keen on to convey to listeners is that it's I'd probably personally take a slightly different view about the fighting, because energetically I always prefer to say we are free, and if someone's making a claim, they have to prove it.
Yeah.
But whatever word to use, I prefer the positive one. The main thing which I do agree with you on is that it's not about not paying, although that might be a consequence of asking the questions and saying, well, I'm happy to pay subject to you being able to provide this.
Mm.
I'm happy to partake of these services. The thing I think is absolutely fantastic is the way that this leads into finding out more information about other parts of the country and sovereignty and government and authority and other issues about basic contract law, which you can use in a wider way.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to finalise what you just said there, it is very important that you're right about the word fight. I mean, I don't treat this as a fight because that's the wrong energy. However, the adversary, which is what the council become to you, have no qualms about using that word or even that methodology.
How about this? How about you need to, I agree with what you said about the spiritual energy,
but
you need to have the confidence to be able to defend yourself or your straw man, if you're using that term,
But to clarify my own position, I always try and nullify their negative energy at the end of the day.
Yes.
You have to. I don't even take it personally against the people that I know.
Most of the people in the council don't know what you and I and what the listeners here are hearing. They don't know this. There's a few people at the top who know, and the most of them just think...
Listen, I've said to you before, I've got 5 or 6 whistleblowers inside councils up and down the country who feed me information, and I know they feed other people information. And some of the stories that I hear from those people who are as scared as the rest of the country about the economic situation, about some of the things the council do to them, it's horrific.
Give me an example.
Well, I've got a guy in the council in the Midlands who works in the council tax department. He was one day late paying his council tax. He works for the council. He was one day late. So they immediately send him a letter saying, you've lost the right to pay by instalments, you don't pay, we'll take you to court, and he had to make an arrangement with the council, i.e. his employer, to make bigger payments to cover up the payment that he'd missed. But they didn't, think, well, he works downstairs, let's go have a quiet word with him and see if we can resolve it amicably. No, they just get the big guns out and steam in. And that's their mentality, and that's why I'm trying to impress upon people that they don't have the same feelings about spirituality and energy that we have. To them, it's just black and white, get the money. That's all it's about.
Okay, moving into some practical issues, I want to move to the what it turns out are fraudulent summons and liability orders in a moment. But just for the person who's saying, well, okay, historical interesting facts, issues about authority, if I'm generally interested in asking some questions, whether you may be behind in the supposed payments that you're supposedly having to make, or you're just interested in finding out a bit more about the truth, what would the simple actions you might take when you or one of these council tax demands lands on the doorstep? What sort of practical stuff that you can do that stays in honour and is an inquiring thing rather than piss off, I'm not going to pay type of response?
Okay. The first thing that we have all done, and I can only talk from my personal experience and Colin and Norman, fundamentally what they're doing is they're making a claim. All the processes in this country require that if somebody makes a claim, if I make a claim against you, that you owe me £10, your immediate and automatic response should be, well, so you say, but prove it.
And where's my order?
And
here's the bill. Where's my order?
So let's come on to the bill and order in a minute, but let's talk about proof of claim. And this is a fundamental point in Sarah Lyons' book, because it goes to the heart of financial evidence. So what we have is we have a proof of claim letter that we write to the council and say, well, okay, I conditionally accept that I owe you this money.
Which is staying in honour for those who know about that.
Yes. So we're not
saying
we're not going to pay it. What we're saying is
I'm happy to pay subject to.
Subject to the following provenances, i.e. that you prove point 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10, however many points you put in that letter. And there's a fairly standard template which we have. And I know that it's on the Freedom Level site, and I am going to put them up on no council tax at some point. But they're flying around most, I think, get out of debt free have got them, and I think other sites have got them. So they're common knowledge, and they're downloadable.
And by the way, just for all listeners, as I used to teach some of this, and I still do to some extent, don't just use templates off the internet or anywhere else and copy paste. You must comprehend and study what it is that you're sending, and comprehend what it means.
That's a very good point.
It's important to not just send things. You need to personalize them and make sure you understand. If you don't know what it means, leave that sentence out or ask somebody else.
Absolutely.
And do some more research.
That's a very good point. I mean, I'm going to say this right at this point because it's relevant. Many, many people come to this process looking for the quick fix. And it just isn't a quick fix, Marcus, as you and I both know. I've spoken to so many people who have come to me through NoCouncil.com and Freedom Levels and have said, I'm up in court for council tax tomorrow, what can I do? And when I write back and say, well, do the best you can because you've left it too late, they get, sometimes they feel abusive towards me and what bloody good are you? And I have to say to them, look, this is not something you can learn in 5 minutes. It's taken me 5 years of my life to get to where I am. It's taken Norman 5 years of his life to get to his knowledge, and John Betts and Colin and Veronica. I mean, Veronica's been doing it years, and Guy Taylor, to get to the position that we're all in. We've all had different journeys, but similar journeys, but we've taken the time to do two things. We've taken the time to make some mistakes and live with those mistakes, if we've made them, in terms of our processes and how we've approached it. But we've also taken the time to learn from those mistakes and go and gain the education that we need to make sure that we never make those mistakes again. And that's what this whole process is about. We've got thousands of people around the country now who are all learning, it's baby steps. We're at the very, very beginning of these processes. And there's a sentiment amongst us now that we're very close.
Okay. So I wanted to cover quite a lot of stuff in the remaining part of the interview. So just very quickly, on the first level, by the way, just for the listeners, just very quickly, as we want to cover as much as we can on council tax and how to deal with it. The idea of the straw man is something you can research on YouTube, meet your straw man, various other things. It's basically the idea that through a birth certificate, another corporate fiction has been created. It took me quite a lot of time to get my head around that. Have a look at it. You can leave it out if you want. It's just another angle you can use in this process.
But it's good to understand.
It's good to understand. So just going back to the initial response. So one thing would be to basically ask for a proof of claim, say, okay, you're claiming this,
exactly.
Here's a standard template, and see what they send back.
And see what they send back.
No. So it could be, and do you refer to some of the stuff that we've talked about before? Do you refer to whether they have authority? Do you refer to whether they're a company?
Yeah.
Do you include the evidence from Dewport in that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you can include an attachment of the fact that they're a corporate status. Am I not correct in stating that you're a company, and therefore where's the contract?
Exactly.
If I'm taking services from you, is there a contract?
Exactly. Yeah.
Have I ordered any services from you? And is this a valid bill? And we better talk about a bill. Let's talk briefly about what a bill is, and is it a bill, and what is a valid bill?
Well, according to the Bills of Exchange Act 1892, a bill basically is an instrument given from one party to another, and in order for it to be valid, it must be signed by both parties. Because a bill fundamentally is a contract at the end of the day. That's all. It's another form of contract. It's me giving you a bill for £100 and saying, well, if you accept this, put your signature on to say that you accept it, because there's the offer of acceptance. Now, in order for me to present the bill, there must be some consideration, some valuable consideration. In other words, if I'm presenting you with a bill for £100, what consideration am I giving you for that £100? I.e., am I delivering refuge protection services to you for a year for that £100? There's the consideration. And according to the Bills of Exchange Act, a bill is not valid unless it's signed by both parties.
So that would basically mean somebody listening would say, well, hang on a minute, I'm getting bills left, right, and centre. I ain't even valid.
Let me demonstrate something that Norman shared with me once. I wasn't actually there, but I think I can relate the story as best he told me. Norman was up at the Court Funds Office in the Strand, in the High Courts, last year, and he got talking to a gentleman in the Court Funds Office about, how ways to pay things. And Norman said to him, well, what about these? And he pulled out a banknote, and the guy said, no, we don't accept those. And Norman looked at him quite stunned and said, what do you mean you don't accept bank notes? And the gentleman said, they are fraudulent promissory notes. And Norman said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, look, get one out. And he got one out. He said, how many signatures are on there? And Norman looked at him and said, one. And the guy apparently smiled.
And I would also add, it's not a wet ink signature,
no.
Because it's not an original one.
No.
So as far as I understand, again, I haven't seen this original source, but it needs to be a wedding signature. But it's interesting that somebody from the, what I call the matrix system, and by the way, for all listeners who want to research this, while you're researching the corporate status of your council, you might just as well, as we'll come to in a minute, research the corporate status of your local magistrates court or county court and Ministry of Justice.
Yes.
That's interesting. So Norman's been interesting. That's an interesting story. Yes. But I want to move on to the interesting stuff that whatever you may think about paying, this is for the listeners, whatever you listeners may think about paying and not paying council tax, this is where it gets really interesting. And I want to ask you before we close today about the amazing bombshell information you've got about the courts. So having had personal experience of this as well, when I say personal, that me as a sentient being operating my agent in the system, for those who know what that means, for those who don't, that's fine.
Yeah.
The council issues, let me summarise it quickly and then you can comment so I can give a kind of heads up for the listeners. If you or your straw man don't pay, you get these various letters, and at some point you get something called a summons.
Yes.
Now, a normal summons, assuming that you agree with the lawful ones, or legal ones, I should say legal actually, not lawful, legal summons in the system, has to come from the court. It has to have a proper court letterhead. It has to come from somebody authorised officer in a court.
And it must be sealed by the court.
And it needs to be sealed by the court.
And it must be signed by a clerk to the justices.
Right, so there's some basic stuff there. Now, if anyone in this listening, or anyone you want to share this with who hasn't listened to this show, pass this on, you will find that none of those things happen.
No.
And I've had this, I'll come to this very briefly if we've got time, I've had this proven in court that these documents do not come from the council, from the court. They don't come from the court, which means they are, not only are they invalid and void because they haven't come from the court, they also constitute fraud and misrepresentation by the council.
Let's deal with those.
So let's ask you about your experience on that.
So we know now that the summonses are issued by the council. They're printed by the council. They've got
which it actually says, because mine came through, or rather my storeman's came through on an A3 piece of paper,
yes,
where three pages were all council information, and the same piece of paper had something supposedly coming from the court.
Exactly. And what they allegedly do is they basically put a piece of paper before the court saying we've got 3,500 summonses, please rubber stamp that, and it's rubber stamped by the courts. That is not, if you go look at the Courts Act 1980, and looking some of the text that we're going to start putting up on the council tax one, the issuing of summons is a judicial matter. It has to be done by a judge. It's a judicial matter. There are high court rulings to support that and put them up. So if the councils are issuing summonses, that's fraudulent, that's Section 6 Fraud Act. And also, to knowingly and willfully enter a false document into court is perjury under Section 5 of the 1911 Perjury Act.
Ah, so very interesting.
So we can have them on that one as well. Now, they know this, and we found out the other day through digging through the Telegraph, we found that my council, Tangier District Council, have been making regular credit card payments.
Ah, I saw the scan of that. Someone's got the list of payments that the council are making.
Yeah, it's on localcouncil.com. You can have a look at it. We've always
to the court.
We've always known, and we've had it confirmed to the council, that they hire the courts. And this we'll come on to why this is important in it. What they do, they 3 months in advance, they book dates in the courts that they're going to deal with the council tax hearings for liability orders.
So does that mean you and I can go and book a date in the court to go
well,
and
know? Yeah, you know, now
on what basis are they booking dates?
Well, exactly, you know, on what basis? So is it premeditated? I don't know.
We haven't got much time, but as we continue on, I just want to also share with listeners the fact that any summons that comes through may or may not have a number on it, but the court does not record any and does not have any record of that.
Let's get to it.
So we've got about another 5 or 6 minutes to see how much you can compress in, including that amazing evidence that you've got.
So the summons is fraudulent, and the liability order, if you ask your counsel for a true and original copy of the liability order, they'll struggle to give it to you, and they will give you some printout that they've got which they tell you is a liability order. What you should do with that is take it down the court, as I did the other day, walk into the clerk of the court, and I said, have a look at that for me, Mrs. Duff, because that's a name, very nice lady. I said, was that issued by the court? She went, no. I said, would you stamp that from the court and write on it that this was not issued by the court? And do you know what she did? She stamped it and wrote on it that this was not issued by the court. So I now have a piece of paper which the council claim was issued by the court, which the court clearly have stamped and said, no, it wasn't.
And just to add to that, by the way, that is, I think, is absolutely dynamite evidence, because you've now got basically one depends on your view, a relatively recognised organisation inside the government monopoly matrix, as I call it, confirming that another organisation is issuing fraudulent document, and if that is entered into any summons, assuming that the summons is valid, which we just said it isn't, and assuming the hearing is valid, which we've got some information that it isn't, it's actually a fraudulent
document. So where are we going with all this? Is there's a number of high court rulings that we're bringing, there's 22 high court rulings we're bringing into the case, which is happening in a couple of weeks.
What sort of rulings? Rulings in
the effect that we're going for what's called the void order. In other words, basically, the law in this country is if the other party do anything that does not observe process in any way, shape, or form, the whole process is void, even the documents, the liability, or whatever. John Betts was in court the other day, and he got, I think it was, I stand to be corrected, I think it was two or three speeding tickets voided in about 10 minutes because he proved that the other side hadn't observed the process. Now, very important, there's an Act of Parliament called the Observance of Due Process of Law, 1368. I'll say it again if you want to write it down, people. The Observance of Due Process of Law, 1368. It was enacted by Henry III as a magisterial act, which means it proceeds to Parliament, means it can never be revealed. It's still on the legislation.gov.uk site. Says no amendments at the top of it. Print it out, take it into a court. And all you've got to do is prove to the court that they didn't observe process in a number of ways.
This is another thing.
Let me finish my mind. Yep. But they didn't observe process. And what that act says is that if they don't observe process, it's all void.
Excellent. Now, we've got another 3 minutes. What people are interested in hearing, just in those last 2 minutes that we've got, I went from 3 to 2 while I was saying it, is if people get a summons, if people get a liability order, what is a straightforward letter notice that, I prefer to use the word notice, that you can send to the council in just 1 minute? What can they research and study as to how to respond to either a summons or a liability order? What are the key points?
Well, basically, we've and this is going to sound mad now. I mean, basically, we've stopped playing the going to liability order hearings game now because they're going to go there anyway. The best way to deal with it is actually let them play their game. You put your proof of claim there, and then let them go to liability order, then ask for a set-aside on the liability order.
And then you will not also ask the court that to because it's really the court you should be asking for the original order form, not the council.
Right, exactly.
Because the court issued it.
Yeah, exactly.
Supposedly,
yeah.
Except we know that they don't.
Yeah, I mean, we could get into a little bit of ruling about administrative courts and all that sort of stuff, but the way that we've done it this time, in my case, is we let them go to liability order, and then we just put a set-aside in. We're now 4.5 months since we got the set. No, sorry. December last year, we got the set-aside on the liability order, and we still haven't got it back into a hearing where they've managed to reopen the set-aside order. Although, when I went to the previous hearing, they did actually try and sneak it in. They didn't object to my set-aside order because they knew they'd have to deal with all the issues that I set down in my statement of grounds. So they sidestepped that and then asked the judge if they could open the liability order here, there and then. And this is what I think. The judge basically looked at it and he said, well, no, you should observe process. You need to give us notice of that. And because I objected, and he actually said to the council that I objected, he said to the council solicitor, I actually tend to agree with my friend here.
So to some, we have had 30 seconds. Just list some of the successes in 30 seconds that people have had around the country that you're aware of in terms of progressing this to fair and equitable resolution.
The people that I've mentioned before, Norman Hintz, Colin Jeffrey, John Betts, Veronica, Guy Taylor, Guy Uden, Roger Hayes, God bless Roger, Patrick Kelly, John Hurst, these are the people you should go and Google. And there's plenty of evidence and fact surrounding all these people about council tax and courts and the lawfulness of courts.
Just to finish, I'll add my own little success there in terms of my straw man in Wandsworth and Battersea. They haven't been able to answer any of the questions. They haven't been able to respond properly to the corporate status. And at a council tax hearing, the magistrate actually agreed, first of all, that I was there representing my straw man, so that's on the record, although they claimed it wasn't. And they also agreed that the documents came from the council and therefore fraudulent, having had previously agreed that they have to emanate from the court. Just to finish off with, I'm going to suggest to listeners, and Ray, you've mentioned the names there, but other things for further research, you can go to Ray's website, nocouncilta.com. Some other general information on freedomrebelsnetwork.co.uk.
normanhinks.com.
normanhinks.com.
FMOTL, FMOTL.com, Veronica's fantastic site. Go and the British Constitution Group, Roger Hayes' site.
BCG, British Constitution Group.
So all these sites are out there. They're great resources of information, you know, and go and gather as much information, get your knowledge, get yourself educated, and then make your move.
Knowledge is power, or applied knowledge is power.
Exactly.
You've been listening to Marcus Matthews on the Money Mavericks show on Untangled FM, talking to Ray Sinclair. Thank you very much for listening, and hope to see you next week. Please pass these recordings far and wide. Good night.